Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. This is Anthony Ray Bench. Still haven't been to Dragon Con. Whatever. Anyway, Chris is making me post the Film Threat panel audio from Dragon Con 2017 as an episode. I didn't want to do that, but here it is. Oh, and because we all know the show is infinitely better when I'm on it, I've decided to insert myself in at certain points. You're welcome, folks. I got your back. Another thing Chris wanted me to tell you was there was a bunch of drunken people in the audience that would periodically shout something at the panelists. Since they weren't mic'd, you kind of have to use your imagination to fill in the blanks, or you could turn the volume up really loud, but I wouldn't recommend you do that. I probably could have fixed that in post, but whatever. I'm lazy. I'm sure you'll be fine. You're a wonderfully smart audience, but apparently Chris doesn't think very highly of you in some regards. Let's get this over with.
Welcome to Dragon Con, everybody. Woo! And we only just started drinking, so this is we'll see how this goes. I've been in panels for the most part. I have been in panels and trying to walk, which is a challenge also for, at Dragon Con when you're going from hotel to hotel. But I'd like to introduce our esteemed panel here of Film Threat podcasters, starting with Shane Mackey, local comedian Shane Mackey.
Hello.
Filmmaker and new resident. You just moved to here.
Yeah, I just moved to the Atlanta area. And this is my very first Dragon Con. So I'm very, cool.
His first, a Dragon Con virgin, Charles de Lazarica, big hand. And of course, Patty Hawkins, comedian Patty Hawkins. And Film Threat critic and writer Bradley Gibson, also a local from Atlanta. Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. We're going to talk about guilty pleasure movies. We all have guilty pleasure movies, and we all would argue probably for our lives for this guilty pleasure movie, whatever it is. It's a movie that we probably on this panel will be in complete agreement that this is not a great movie. This is not a great movie, but for some reason, we find ourselves compelled to revisit this film and see it over and over and over again. These are not great works of cinema to the world of in the normal world of filmmaking, but for us, there's something meaningful about it. A lot of times, it's something maybe we saw when we were younger, more open-minded to pieces of crap, but what I'd like for us to do is argue for our guilty pleasure movie, and what's going to happen is we need to argue passionately because you, the audience, are going to decide which person on this panel will never be able to watch their guilty pleasure movie again.
What?
So each of us is, look, I want you guys, raise your right hand.
Citizen Kane.
Raise your right hand, everybody on this panel, okay, raise your right hand.
I
state your name.
State your name.
Agree that I will abide by the decision of the audience. I heard someone not actually say those words. I agree. I will abide by the decision of the audience.
I will abide.
To never watch my guilty pleasure movie again.
To never watch my guilty pleasure movie again.
We'll see. Okay, so we're going to, first of all, let's just talk in general about guilty pleasure movies, but I want each of you to think about what's the movie you're going to advocate for? What is the film you're going to pick that's your guilty pleasure movie that you're putting on the chopping block and you, the audience, are going to determine which one of us will not be able to watch that movie ever again? I'm also including myself in this scenario, so I'm just as guilty for my guilty pleasure as anyone else here. So let's in general talk about guilty pleasure movies. What consists of a guilty pleasure movie? What are the elements of a guilty pleasure movie? Production value might not be an element of a guilty pleasure movie, but what's a guilty pleasure film?
Any movie that you adore, you tried to show to friends and family and loved ones, and they're like, you're crazy, this is a piece of crap.
Right. What are some of the other elements?
Yeah, that just triggered a memory for me. I think Patty's right on that.
Yes. Tell us the story, the memory that was triggered. They triggered a memory.
There's this one scene in the middle of this movie. I found endlessly hysterical, and I tried to show my family and like my grandmother, and it just fell flat every time. It's a movie by the Hudson Brothers called Hysterical.
Wow.
And, I love that movie.
Okay, yeah. And it's kind of like the scary movies before there were scary movies, that kind of thing. And Richard Kiel's, it's got a good cast, Richard Kiel and...
Julie Newmar.
Yes, Julie Newmar. And Franklin Ajay.
Gary Owens.
And John Larroquette is in it for just a minute or two. And it's horrible and it's bad, but... when I started getting streaming services, that's the first thing I looked for.
What difference does it make? What difference does it make?
So it's so bad looking back, but I love it.
What are some of the other elements of a guilty pleasure movie? Because most guilty pleasure movies are not successful at the box office. These are not movies that blow up and are huge successes, right? They're usually something that tanks, perhaps in the cult arena. I mean, like, I think for any filmmaker to have a movie that's considered a cult classic is like, this is a movie that failed miserably, and then an audience somehow found it funny, but not for the right reasons, right? Like The Room, right? I think The Room is a guilty pleasure movie that is a cult classic that is, I think we would all agree, not a good film, but The Room has there's stuff about it that it's just compelling, especially. Well, precisely, but and I don't know if you guys saw the trailer to The Disaster Artist with James Franco. Looks like it's going to be brilliant. And if you've not read that book, The Disaster Artist, it's a fantastic book. You should check that out. But what are some other elements of a guilty pleasure film?
For me, it's if it was a kind of a pleasant surprise, like you'd go into a movie. The movie I'm probably going to mention. Had terrible word of mouth going into it. Everyone thought it was going to be an absolute disaster. And it just defied those expectations in a way that I actually was charmed by it. I thought, it's not so bad. I begin the movie by thinking, oh, it's not that bad. And then just increasingly surprised me throughout. And even though it's not a classic, quote-unquote, good movie, it just won me over in this sort of underdog spirit. It was like, oh, okay, you guys stuck to your vision, as misguided as it was, and I will root you guys on, you know?
What, are you going to tell us what the movie is?
Should we get into that part of it now?
Maybe keep that to yourself. All right. Okay. But what are some of the other elements
It might have to do with who you were with when you saw it, mm-hmm. or what was happening in your life when you saw it.
Oh, yep. That's true.
So yeah. You're having a great time, and your life's rolling, everything's good. So you saw this horrible movie, but you always think about that time when you see that movie.
Right, like context, I think, is very important to the enjoyment of a film. For example, if you just got out of a bad relationship, or you're going through a bad breakup, and then movies just don't seem as funny. They're just not as funny. I remember seeing Ghostbusters after I broke up with my girlfriend at the time, and Ghostbusters just, I didn't love it at the first time I saw it. Then saw it more and more, and it's like, all right, this is a great film. But when my first viewing of Ghostbusters, I freaking hated it. But I didn't like much of anything at that time. So you're right. Context, I think, is really important. So let's name some of the greatest, what could be considered in the realm, while you guys are ruminating on what movie you're going to choose to put on the chopping block. What are some guilty pleasure movies? If you were going to curate one of those lists on Netflix that says guilty pleasure movies, what would be in that scrolling list of films? Right off the top of your head.
Spice World.
Spice World? Okay, why Spice World?
It has Roger Moore.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good... Yeah.
No, actually...
Casting is a big thing.
It was completely, it was what it was, but again, I found it charming. And I actually think that's a very good word to describe these guilty pleasures. There's something individually about it that the chemistry just mixes with you. It just happens.
Yeah, there is, and casting is a big part. Like, I almost think like Nicolas Cage movies as a genre are guilty pleasure movies. Just Nicolas Cage. I was recently at San Diego Comic-Con and picked up a Dragon Con gift for, we did our, I'm not sure if you guys do this, but we exchange gifts at the beginning of Dragon Con. This is, Shane and I have done this every year, and I got Shane a Nicolas Cage Color Forms set.
It's amazing.
I picked up at Comic-Con, and it's got Nicolas Cage in all sorts of forms, and it has like a sort of gold Buddha head statue of Nicolas Cage's head. And
it has two. And a keytar you can give him.
It's jet like, just like any Color Form set, it has all these accessories, and there's like four or five different Nicolas Cages, but they're all like bizarre. Like, I could see Nicolas Cage doing all of these things, right? Like, it's not a stretch. His movies, I think, in general, as a genre, they're guilty pleasure. But what are some other ones that you guys like? For me, Flash Gordon. Sam Jones is
I unapologetically love that movie. There's no guilt about that. Right? That's a great movie.
Well, there's no, first of all, I remember I was a kid when I saw it, and just, I don't know about you, but there is some stuff in that is
naughty.
It's pretty freaking sexy.
That was my 10th birthday. 10th birthday of seeing Flash Gordon at the Dollar Theater.
There's definitely some bonerific parts of that film.
I feel like Flash Gordon, it falls into the category of a cult film and not necessarily a guilty pleasure, because I feel like a guilty pleasure needs to be something that an overwhelming majority, that you really feel a sense of weird sense of solitariness about it. Whereas, yeah, I think, does anybody in here not like Flash Gordon? Okay, good, because I want to tell you, get the fuck out.
But no, I love that movie. I love that movie too. In fact, I know I recently had an encounter with some filmmakers from the UK that are doing a documentary called Life After Flash. And it's about Sam Jones and what happened to Flash Gordon. And I learned something from the filmmakers. This is that I didn't know about. Now, they had planned to make Flash Gordon like the new Star Wars. Dino De Laurentiis was going to do the new Star Wars with Flash Gordon, right? Which was what George Lucas originally wanted to do. He wanted to make Flash Gordon. There was all this problems with the rights, and so he ended up making Star Wars, which it did okay. But but Flash Gordon, there was planned sequels, and I found out what the beginnings of the plot of the sequel was supposed to be.
What?
You know, the sort of right-hand guy, Clytus?
Yeah.
Clytus. It was supposed to have a little tag ending where a character goes into a room, and Clytus is just a face, it's just a mask. There are many Clytus, right?
Okay.
Walked in a room with a room filled with Clytus masks. And this person would have put on the mask to be the new Clytus, and Clytus was going to be the villain of the next movie, right?
Clytus was a title, not a name.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's a title. It's not like their name, like a Darth, right? Okay. So I thought that was okay. You guys are not impressed. I got so hard when I heard that news about the potential sequel for Flash Gordon.
Get those nerds! Nerd!
But
I will say this much about Flash Gordon, and that's why I've always said this. That is the most perfectly cast film of all time.
It's
everybody in that movie was put there here by God to be in that film. And everything that happened after that was there was left to their own devices. Their destiny was fulfilled. That's why Sam Jones has kind of floundered, because
I think the thing that was against it is the special effects were pretty, you know, not up to 80s standards. I mean, you could see the blue screen lines around the Hawkman. And I was fortunate enough to get into actually an early rough cut screening of it a year before Flash Gordon came out.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I know, I was a nerdy kid, so I would go to things like that. But what else? We're talking in general just guilty pleasure movies before we get to the audience. We're going to be in the audience's hands.
What about The Highlander?
Highlander! The first or the second one? The first one, yes.
It was only one.
The thing is, I remember loving Highlander when it first came out. It doesn't hold up, right?
Like, no, it does not hold up.
You take that back, Charles. Highlander is perfect.
At the time, it was a well-received film, I think, and it was a cult film over the years, and it captured that 80s MTV style that Russell Mulcahy was really kind of pioneering with his music videos, and then directed this, and the Queen music, and the Michael Kamen score, and that Sean Connery, you know, it had a bunch of greatness in it, and at the time it seemed like the right thing, and now it just has not aged well at all.
I think once it hit VHS, it got...
Yeah. I think the second one ruined the first Highlander movie for me, because the second one is where you find out, well, they're all from outer space, and there can be maybe more than one. So that kind of ruined the whole conceit, right?
As awful as the second one is, I prefer it to the third one. At least they tried to advance the story.
There's a third one.
The third one is a beat-for-beat remake, plot-wise, of the first one.
It is. They, like, laid the scripts down.
Yeah, literally. And the Vera Van Peebles plays a clone of the Kurgan, and there's even a scene where he's driving all crazy with a girl screaming. It's dreadful.
That's weird. All right, so Highlander, I feel like that's a good one to put on the board. Let's nominate some more guilty pleasure movies. Not necessarily the one you'll pick, but a guilty pleasure film. Can I throw one out?
Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
Really quick, Showgirls.
Showgirls?
Yeah.
Now, okay, what are the reasons that Showgirls is on that guilty pleasure list?
I feel very guilty every time I watch it.
Well, yes. I mean, like, it's pretty much a comedy.
You have to look at it as a comedy, or at least a satire, because taken as a straight drama, it is laughably bad. I mean, really, some of the worst acting and over directing, and it's crazy bad if you take it seriously. But if you get underneath it, and I think what Paul Verhoeven was brilliant at with RoboCop in terms of satire is not so easy to lock onto with Showgirls, because you kind of take it at face value in the beginning, and then once you kind of like maybe start to peel that back a bit, you can start to enjoy it a bit more as satire. It's just not as obvious about it, or is clean about it, I think.
Were you aware that they made a Showgirls 2?
I am aware of that.
All right, well, yeah. Yes.
You gave me the DVD of it, I believe.
I did give you the DVD, yeah. But I think I was trying to get rid of it. So, wait, you said there's a Showgirls 3?
No, there are three Showgirls 2s.
There are three
What?
Okay, you have to explain this story. Wait. Come up and tell this into the microphone so we can get it on the podcast here. So three?
There are at least two. I think there are three of them. There was one that was called Showgirls 2 Pennies from Heaven, which is probably the one that you know about. There was another one that was done by one of the, like, third associate producers that I never actually saw. I've only seen a trailer for it, and it looks like a shot-on-video cop movie for some reason. Nobody really knows why it was called Showgirls, and I think there was a third attempt that reached some measure of completion. But there's definitely at least two of them.
Wow.
Just to note, when he said completion, there were air quotes. That's for the people that are just listening to this. I think there's a third stage guild navigator in the next room. That's why that weird pulsating noise, which leads me to Dune.
Also not a guilty pleasure. That's a straight up good movie. I'll fight anyone who says otherwise.
Oh, well, that movie did kind of, it tanked when it came out to theaters initially. But I love that film now in retrospect. At the time I saw it, I hated it because I was a fan of the books. So, and I had read the first four books. Well, there you go. So it doesn't matter.
You come to the right place.
It doesn't matter then.
The argument they have with my girlfriend.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, Dune, like, it's I think it's aged better, certainly, than Highlander. Whereas it's worthwhile. Like, the attempt, I think, is there. But if you look at Dune, if you've read at least the first book.
Y'all know I'm cosplaying as Han Highlander tomorrow night, right?
What's that? You are?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. But like, I feel like Dune is actually Game of Thrones. If you go back and read the books, Dune is Game of Thrones in outer space. It's politics, religion, it's sex, it's, you know, armies and you know, houses being strategic. They have the different houses. It is, George R.R. Martin just took, yes, I did air quotes again there. It really is very much like Game of Thrones, right? The dragons are the worms. I mean, it's, you could draw that analogy. So, but you would argue, so at the time you first saw it, you liked it?
Like, no, I hated it when I first saw it.
I had a similar experience.
I'm sure some of you guys remember this, but opening weekend or whatever, if you went to the theater, they handed out a glossary of terms. They gave you the sheet of paper that you're supposed to read in the dark in the theater, like, you know, what Muad'Dib means. It's like,
there was no cell phones back then. Yeah. Use light.
No, it seemed like a completely mishandled train wreck of a film. The visual effects weren't quite finished. You know, the blue eyes would come and go. It made no sense sometimes. But and some of it seemed really pretentious and artsy. But then you got to keep in mind that, you know, David Lynch hadn't quite gone mainstream yet. I mean, you know, Eraserhead was a cult film. Elephant Man was a beautiful Oscar caliber film. But he didn't quite have a track record that people could lock onto and say, oh, that's a David Lynch movie. And I feel like Dune, in many ways, is one of the first ones to really kind of lay down a lot of the basic big elements that would later be revisited. And I think the world building of Dune is second to none. I mean, you can like track some of the great world building films. I mean, going back to the beginning of cinema, but let's just say Star Wars was ground zero for a lot of that. I would say after that, you've got maybe Blade Runner, Dune, and then I'm not a huge fan of the film, but Avatar did a lot of like heavy lifting in terms of world building. I think Dune is one of those films where it's like, regardless of what you think of the script, regardless of what you think of the final product, the attention to detail that it took to construct this world out of nothing is extremely impressive.
And if we know anything about David Lynch, and you've been watching the new Twin Peaks, he's gone totally mainstream. Yeah. He's no, he hasn't. I think the new Twin Peaks is brilliant, and this last episode was incredible. I can't wait for the finale.
One thing I always love about Dune is that it truly was epic in the sense that it was the first sci-fi movie that really felt big to me. I felt like it was gargantuan and the scope and the planets and everything else.
And that cast.
Yeah.
One of the most amazing casts ever assembled, I think.
Yes. Perhaps rivaling even Flash Gordon in terms of cast.
Another Dino De Laurentiis movie.
Yeah.
I've got a lowbrow guilty pleasure.
Okay, let's hear a lowbrow guilty pleasure.
The Wingshauser classic Vice Squad.
What?
Yes.
Let's hear your argument.
Well, okay, I'm not putting this talking about, but Wings... Okay, it was heavily in circulation in the heyday of HBO, so that's where I first encountered it. And Wingshauser, I would argue his character Ramrod, this evil pimp in the early scuttly days of L.A., is one of the greatest, nastiest screen villains you'll ever see. This is truly a character who is evil and knows it and doesn't do it at all, and rerun from What's Happening Now gets his testicles cut off by him.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And the whole movie is absolutely crazy, and it's a caricature of the sleazy, it's like side of L.A. in that early cocaine years and the trafficking and everything else in those kind of post-70s disco era, but kind of pre-AIDS crack era. So it's a unique window. I think it's a unique window in that time slot. It was a grindhouse movie after the grindhouses had disappeared.
Okay, let's talk about more guilty pleasure movies. We're throwing them out. Who else has a good one?
So I thought of another possible criteria. There's some films for me that if it comes on the television, I can't not watch it. Like whatever I'm doing, gets suspended.
Twister.
Twister?
That's not mine. That's Rebecca's. Devil's Advocate. Mine is, but Twister is Rebecca's. Yes. And mine is Dazed and Confused, the Linklater film.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not a guilty pleasure.
Not a guilty pleasure, but I have to watch it. I have to watch it. Another one for me is the Oliver Stone Doors film. I have to watch that if it comes on. Hmm. It's, looking back on it, it's an okay movie, but I have to watch it if it comes on.
For me, it's Disney's The Black Hole.
I love that. I love that movie. I love that movie. Maximilian, the robot.
Yes, they will always make fun of me for liking bad films like The Black Hole, but oddly enough, Black Hole is not available on Blu-ray. I purchased it a digital copy of it, and it includes first of all, it's in HD, which is pretty incredible, but it includes the overture on it. So
I have that on the last iPod.
Really?
I do have that.
You have the black hole?
Yeah.
It's just the one robot that's based on Slim Pickens, like...
Bob.
Old Bob.
Bob, yeah. Old Bob.
Old Bob!
Yeah, like, what? So, I mean, it's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea in Outer Space, but that's one of those...
But it's also Moby Dick, and it's also Heart of Darkness, and it is this... wonderful quagmire that makes no sense. It's the great enigma of sci-fi geek cinema. You know, it wanted to be Star Wars, it wanted to be 2001, it wanted to be Star Trek, and it failed at all of it.
Right, yeah. No, wow, I never thought of it that way. It like really did kind of try to mix all three of those.
But it has some amazing stuff in it as well. I mean, the design of the Cygnus is so beautiful and haunting and scary.
It's a terrifying film. Yeah. It's like Star Trek the Motion Picture. The first act of Star Trek the Motion Picture is terrifying, in my opinion. V'ger is scary.
Right.
But yeah, Black Hole terrified me as a kid.
And that ending is crazy.
It should have been PG-13.
Yeah.
Wow, so you mentioned V'ger, which Okay. Star Trek The Motion Picture is one of my guilty pleasures because no one likes that Star Trek movie. When you mention Star Trek...
That's not true. A lot of people like it.
Well, yes, the super nerds, but like...
I will concede that...
But yeah. Star Trek, everyone's like, if you like Star Trek and you like Star Trek movies, it's all like, Wrath of Khan is the best one, Star Trek 2. I'm like, I liked The Motion Picture. So, but it was because, for me, it was, again, that context that we were talking about earlier. Like, I mean, Star Wars came out of nowhere when it first came out, right? It just came out and there was no hype about it. It just suddenly, there was a movie called Star Wars in the theaters and everyone had to go see it. But Star Trek The Motion Picture, I'd read about for years in all the science fiction magazines at the time. And for those of you that don't know, a magazine is like the internet, but on really thin slices of wood.
If I had a dollar for every time I've heard Chris tell that joke, I wouldn't be drowning up to my eyeballs in student debt. Sorry, continue.
So Starlog magazine was a nerdy magazine that I read, and I looked forward. There was hype about Star Trek The Motion Picture, and it also had an overture. But the thing that, like, you know, years later I look back and I'm like, so this whole thing, for those of you, I'm sure you've seen the movie Star Trek The Motion Picture, you suffered through it or whatever. So at the end of the movie, they rub off the dirt. And it's like, oh, it's Voyager 6. It's not V'ger. But I'm just thinking, like, so the robot planet, this technologically advanced race, they didn't have a thing to clean the sides to get the
Why would that matter? Because they don't read English necessarily, so it wouldn't matter to them.
I guess, but so there's a scorned part, but like Kirk in like 2 seconds like wipes it off. It's like, oh, this is Voyager 6. It was sent out by NASA and blah, blah, blah.
Two seconds. The movie's like 8 hours long.
I'm saying in the last part of the movie, he just rubs it off and it's like, oh, it's Voyager 6. The alien race is like, oh, this is V'ger. Sorry, we forgot to clean you. weird alien satellite from another galaxy. I don't know. There's weird things where you just accept them at the time. And then if you really think about them, you're like, oh, that's pretty dumb.
V'ger was the closest thing I got to an introduction to Lovecraft before I even knew what Lovecraft was.
How so?
Just the enormity, this giant, abysmal, amorphous thing that had no form, no shape, no means of communication. It was just this thing that was lashing out without even any logic to it. It was destroying some stuff, then it was absorbing some stuff, and the Enterprise was going absolutely deep into this thing. I really felt like that this cast, the characters that I adored, I really thought all the cards are against them in this one. There's nobody to trick. There's nobody else. And then, you know, then the second and third act, it lessens it a little bit as soon as the Aelia approach.
But it's over 82 AUs in diameter, although they did redub that line, didn't they?
Now it's two AUs, which two is still AUs. An absurd amount of...
And if you don't know what an AU is a system of measurement. It's each AU is a solar system wide. Isn't that...
No, it's the distance from the Earth to the Sun, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But that's still pretty freaking big.
I'm still waiting for I was waiting for Star Trek to, because they had a Dyson Sphere in an episode of Next Generation, and at the time I was like, do they know how big that thing is supposed to be? It's a sphere that covers an entire solar system. And then I always kept saying, that's a Star Trek series right there. Just a group of explorers exploring the Dyson Sphere. Never happened.
More guilty pleasure movies before I compel you to choose the one that you may never get to see again.
The Rock.
Oh.
When you brought this up, that was, it's like, it's Michael Bay. It's, yeah.
Yeah, man.
You're confusing the other Armageddon, sir.
Armageddon's on my list.
That's a guilty pleasure movie, Armageddon. But The Rock, like, although Sean Connery in The Rock,
yeah,
is so good, and Nicolas Cage in an uncharacteristic, unhinged performance. He's always unhinged. Nicolas Cage is always unhinged.
Ed Harris is a badass.
Yeah.
It's just
the scene with he and Michael Biehn.
Yeah, when they face off, it's amazing.
Yeah, like some of the, like, the dialogue's so horrible, but it's like, I have to see where this goes every time, even though I know it doesn't make any sense at all.
But you're right. It is one of those ones where it's like, I don't know. It does have like a kinetic energy that makes it, I don't know, it's exciting.
That and Samurai Cop.
What? So. Samurai Cop.
Samurai Cop.
Wait, is that the trauma one?
No, it should be.
Oh, that's Sergeant Kabuki Man. Yeah, Sergeant Kabuki Man. Sorry about that. Apologies to Lloyd Kaufman if he's listening to this podcast. I love you, Lloyd.
Note to self. Make Chris Gore watch Samurai Cop. Also, buy milk.
Okay, well, tell me about Samurai Cop.
Samurai Cop, and it was made in the mid-80s, and it got a little resurgence, and they even made two sequels in the last couple years out of this dumb popularity it got. Every scene in the movie looks like an outtake from another movie. Like, it's the worst thing you'll ever see, but it's oddly hypnotic. So
Wow. Okay, some more. Just everybody down the line. Name one. This is not necessarily going to be yours, the one, but, like, let's hear some more.
So there's this old early 80s film. I'll be surprised if anyone knows it. About this warrior with a three-bladed sword that he can fire.
Talking about Sword and the Sorcerer?
Sword and the Sorcerer, of course!
That's one of mine.
Directed by Albert Pyun.
I actually love that movie.
I love that movie, too.
I love that movie.
First of all, it's like, it was way ahead of its time because it was sort of a mix of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Excalibur. It was like a Sword and Sandals thing, but there was tons of nudity. And I remember as a kid going, I love this film. There was just crazy amounts of gratuitous, unnecessary nudity, just topless women just walking around. It was like Conan,
The hero was awesome. It was Lee Horsley.
Right.
Playing a Talon, the warrior.
Right.
It was not to love.
Got two horrible sequels.
Yes. No, well, see, that's the weird thing, is at the very end of the movie, they say, and Talon will return in Sword and the Sorcerer 2.
Secret of the Lost Empire. Yeah, that's what it was called.
Years later, it was never made, and then they ended up making it, and it was sort of beyond its time. I do think that, like, if you're going to make a sequel, you kind of have to make it sooner rather than later. Because I think that, we've even experienced this today where it's like, you waited a long time to make a sequel, Like, they recently, this is just a couple years ago, they made a sequel to Return of the Jedi. And it was called The Force Awakens. It's the sequel. And then they barely used any of the cast.
And are we ever getting Buckaroo Banzai against the World Crime League?
Buckaroo Banzai, right. Right, oh yeah, and Buckaroo Banzai had a promised sequel at the end. That was when it was like, and Superman will return in Superman 2, right? Like, they would do little tags at the ends of these movies, not end credit sequences, but little tags. Well, there's a whole other story about how that was half made and they tricked the cast into signing, and we're not going to pay them for two. They didn't tell them where they were making two movies because the script for Superman was like 400 pages or some crazy thing. Well, we recently went to that event with Richard Donner. Do you want to talk about that a bit? That was pretty amazing. Charlie and I were part of a group of people went to see Richard Donner tribute at the Academy, and it was pretty amazing. I mean, he talked about Superman, among other things. Do you have any highlights from that you want to share?
I mean, it was just amazing the amount of actors who showed up to actually talk about Dick Donner and his career and what an amazing person he is, beyond just being a really, I think, under-respected filmmaker. I think he's actually a really terrific director. And, amazingly, at the end of it, they brought out Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. And whatever you think of Mel Gibson, it was almost like for the 15 minutes there on stage, it kind of just washed away, and it was old, cool Martin Riggs Mel Gibson with Danny Glover as Roger Murtaugh, and so those two guys were back for, like, it was almost like Lethal Weapon 4.5 up on stage. That was a lot of fun. I don't remember much about Superman, though. They showed the clip, the helicopter rescue clip, but what were you getting at with Superman?
He talked about just how difficult it was to make Superman convincingly fly.
Right.
They were constantly doing tests because it looked crappy. And there were tons of cheats to making it look like he could fly. So
yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that based on the Superman 2 coming soon tag at the end, it actually says next year Superman 2, and that was 1978, and it actually took until 1981 for Superman 2 to come out. So they're a little ahead of the their own game there.
Right.
Do you remember in the James Bond movies when they used to say James Bond Returns, sometimes they would give the title at the end, and sometimes they get it wrong.
Once they got it wrong.
Once they got it wrong.
They said it was Spy Love Me, and they said For Your Eyes Only was next, but then Star Wars hit.
Yeah.
So they jumped to Moonraker to take advantage of the space craze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's just James Bond Returns.
Well, speaking of guilty pleasure James Bond movies, I have one. It's not a good James Bond movie, and I still love this movie. It's Moonraker. Moonraker, which came out right out.
That's
it came
a
out
very
after
guilty
Star
pleasure,
Wars.
Yeah.
It's really bad. It utters the classic line, which is amazing, where it's like James Bond's won, and you know they're hurtling towards Earth, and he's having zero G sex with this woman.
With Holly Goodhead.
Yeah, Holly Goodhead. So he's having sex with her in outer space, and they're about to land on Earth. And I forget who says the line,
it's
but
cute.
He just says, he's attempting re-entry. yeah, exactly. That was my reaction too. But it's just...
And then she says, take me around the world one more time, James.
Right, right. I mean, it was, it really is like sort of, Austin Powers is not a parody. I mean, that was just doing Austin Powers. I mean, it was just straight up like, you know, full of itself. It was funny. So I love that. That's my guilty pleasure. It's not a good James Bond movie. It's
but
not
that's
serious.
Kind of, that's
but
kind of
I like
aged, it's aged a little bit better than I thought it would. I mean, I think people now look back upon Moonraker as being better than I think there's a period like right after it came out until maybe like a couple years ago where people just really made fun of that film because like the big Venice gondola, you know, hovercraft scene or whatever with the pigeon doing the double take as it goes by. I mean, it has that kind of silly, wacky comedy where Bond pressing the code on the entry and it's the five notes from Close Encounters. It just had a very silly pop culture cartoon sensibility to it. But now, for some reason, when you look at what's come since, including Austin Powers, you kind of don't hate it as much, I think.
Would you throw Octopussy in there, too? Because yeah, those were really I close together.
Octopussy is interesting because that's the one film where James Bond hears his own theme. There's that flute player
what?
In the street.
Yeah, yeah.
The snake charmer is playing his flute to this cobra.
It's the call sign.
And he plays the Bond theme, and then Bond himself says, catchy tune. You know, it's one of the few films where the lead character hears his own theme.
I think Act 1 and 2 of Moonraker actually are reasonably grounded for the time, and then the third act, of course, becomes the ending of the Green Slime, and very Star Wars related, whatever like that. But yeah, it is what I'm talking about. But yeah, Moonraker definitely a good guilty pleasure, and I always love the backlash too that For Your Eyes Only was extremely grounded and is actually my favorite Roger Moore.
Mine too.
For precisely that reason, they went let's go hardcore back to Ian Fleming.
Well, I mean, we could name so many. I feel like we're naming a lot of them from the same era. Maybe that's, I hope I have an influence to it. Krull would be another one. Krull, which was... nothing wrong with Krull. But I feel like we live in the age of franchise filmmaking, right? I mean, you know, you're not going to invest in some big film, like a big genre fantasy film, science fiction, whatever, anymore, unless you're going to make five of them or a planned five because they're toy lines and merch deals and whatnot. But Krull, I think, is one that didn't succeed at the time, but you look back and it was really ambitious and the music is great and it's Liam Neeson's great.
Yeah, Columbia thought that was going to top Return of the Jedi like that summer. I mean, they were definitely angling towards taking over the science fantasy, you know, genre moving after Jedi completing. But I mean, if you look at the teaser posters and the way they're positioning Krull, they definitely thought they had the next big thing.
And the arcade game.
Yeah.
I used to play the arcade. I saw the movie once, but I'd play the arcade game over and over. So
I still want to find a good glaive.
I would, yes, a prop replica glaive.
Yeah.
You might find it at the merch area.
Well, why though? They throw it away at the end. Let's slay him with the power of love.
Yeah,
Krull to me was a dirty lie. It was, they lured me in thinking it was going to be sci-fi and swords and all that good stuff that was going on in the early 80s, and it turned out to be a Harlequin romance fantasy.
Right.
That's true.
What other ones do we have?
You just remind
Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
Oh,
in
yes.
In 3D, not yes. to be confused with Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin.
Or Treasure of the Four Crowns.
Four Crowns, yes.
Or Coming At You.
What do you think of, what are going to be some future guilty pleasure movies? I'm talking about movies that have come out recently that may have tanked, that in 10 years from now we're going to say, oh, that's my guilty pleasure. I watch it constantly. But when you first saw it, you hated it.
Anything from the DCU?
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, Suicide Squad could be that. But what other, from like, present day, future guilty pleasure movies.
The Fantastic Four reboot?
No, those are all shitty movies.
Okay, but all
just
right.
So,
I didn't...
Just to be clear,
right,
there's no
fair.
Argument there.
Fair call.
Yeah, but I do think there's something about it, like, where something is a guilty pleasure. I think age has something to do with it. It has to have, you know, existed for a certain amount of time.
For me personally, I'll say Deadpool, because anybody who knows me knows I'm a very outspoken critic of the character and the main pool and everything else. But I wanted to hate the movie, but I liked it. You know, anyway, it won me over against myself. So on a personal level, I would say, yeah, Deadpool's a guilty pleasure.
But I'd say Deadpool was pretty successful.
And
actually,
that's fine. That's a testament to how awesome it
Wait,
was.
She has a suggestion. What? Yell it out. Oh, yeah. Jupiter Ascending. Oh, my God. That movie, yeah. See, I'd like to watch that 5 years from now and go, I can't freaking believe they made this movie. The Wachowski brothers, who are geniuses.
Sisters.
Like, so, that's right. Spaceship. The Wachowskis.
The Wachowski spaceship.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very much appreciated by very drunk at DragonCon.
Right. There's got to be someone out there with those, like, those rollerblades that he had, those space rollerblades. What, I mean, it seemed like an idea out of the 80s.
It was like Solar Babies.
It was.
Remember Solar Babies?
Right.
It was like
oh
that.
Oh, my God. I try to forget it, but yeah. Yes.
Jupiter Ascending was like a $800 million version of Ice Pirates, Solar Babies.
Ice Pirates. It's just it's a million bad ideas in one, including like the Queen of Earth cleaning toilets. So, yes, you had a something to add.
Matrix sequels fall into this because it's
oh yes
Matrix, right every time I watch the Matrix I'm like and then I want to revisit the sequel
right
I'm like, this is terrible but I sit and watch it for 3 hours
it's yeah crazy. the sequels to the Matrix definitely I think fit the level of guilty pleasure because they're not the Matrix I think the first movie is nearly a perfect film and it's epic but the second and third film but there are like moments where I'm like well I kind of love that highway chase scene I love the highway chase and I kind of like Keanu Reeves being tripped up by the architect you know with this weird sort of this weird conversation that they have and the third film with the big mechs is kind of cool like it's I don't know it is guilty pleasure because it didn't quite work but those action sequences are pretty amazing. So, wait, did you have something? No, yes, sir, yes, Captain America.
Hear me out.
Okay, he's asking us to hear him out.
The floor is yours.
Speed Racer.
Speed Racer, yes. I have heard this recently. There's all these threads online now, people saying, Speed Racer, you got to take a look at it. Like, it's, yes, yeah.
Speed Racer for the first 8 minutes.
Right.
The other 8 minutes, good, that they should.
Yes, there can be a supercut of that. A supercut of Speed Racer done by Topher Grace, I think, would
that's
be
so,
coming
that's
at
so
some
weird,
point.
That's so weird. Because for me, it's the opposite. It wasn't working for me for the first 40 minutes. But the minute the guy had the beehive launcher, he had a weapon that was a beehive.
I suppose my point is there's a decent, like, slightly longer than hour movie in there, but it's 2.5 hours long.
Sure.
All right, so I have some stuff to give away after the panel, some film threat related stuff.
Is it Dick Shark? I bet it's Dick Shark.
But everyone who gave a suggestion, come up and grab a DVD from the stack of all terrible movies. What is this? I don't know what this is. Confessions of Isabella, right? Yes, come up and grab. You add, anyone who spoke and spoke up, come and get a free DVD. There is no Nightmare on Elmo Street. Yes,
actually,
but here, this is, I have no idea what some of this stuff is. This looks awful.
Speaking
I'll bet
of,
you would love it. What is this?
Look at this nightmare
no
fuel
idea what this
you're giving
is.
Away. What is this?
What
like?
I don't know. I have no idea what some of this stuff
there's,
is.
There's three movies in that.
This, okay.
I'm sure they're horrible.
Anyone else that would like to give a suggestion, come up to the microphone. I've got about 4 or 5 more of these. Come on up to the microphone. You get a free DVD if you just give a suggestion of a guilty pleasure movie. Guys, I can only one at a time. Only one at a time. Come on up to the microphone.
Yeah,
come on up
to
the microphone. Mic. What do you got?
Rima Williams.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, I love
Rima
Williams.
Williams.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, you earned it. You earned it. Here, take. There you go. That looks good. Okay, who else has one? I've only got a few DVDs left. Come on up. Come on up. Say it into the. You got to say it into the microphone. I've only got a few. Okay, what is it?
Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo.
Oh, that's one. You get one of those. What about Speed? Speed. Oh, Speed. Yeah, no, Speed. Speed's good. Yeah. Okay, wait.
I love you, Alice B. Toklas.
Oh, wow. That's a deep cut. Here you go. Wait.
The Haunted Mansion. The one with Eddie Murphy.
Oh, wow. What a piece of shit. Here, I'll give you a piece of shit. Yeah. Oh, wait. I've got something for you. Here, come on up.
Okay, I'm fine. It kind of falls in between, like, the 80s and the now, but Space Jam?
Yes.
I've had people tell me they don't like Space Jam, and I will fight to the death for that movie.
Here, you've earned this book, The Internet is My Religion. There you go. It's printed on books.
Space Jam is defended by everybody who's at
the
white
gate. Wait, you got another one?
Yeah, exactly.
Suggestion.
Yeah.
Wait, let's hear the suggestion.
One of the ones that I will basically fight anybody who has actually seen it who doesn't like it is Lady in the Water. And that leads me to a lot of fights, but still, it is a film that I will absolutely go round and round on, simply based on the premise that it says at the beginning, it's a bedtime story. It's not a fairy tale. It's crap you made up to make the little bastards go to sleep. And on that premise, it plays like a baby doll.
Father of the year, folks, right here. Wait, did you have one suggestion?
Attack of the Clones.
Ooh, no.
Oh, my God.
No.
We were just talking about that movie. If you've ever watched the honest trailers, right, on YouTube of Attack of the Clones, Anakin's a creeper. We were just talking about this afternoon at our Star Wars panel. You were going to make a comment.
No?
No. Okay, I thought that was the face you make when you want to make a comment.
If you hit the chapter skip button every time Anakin and Padme are on the screen.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi, Space Detective. So I would rather see that movie than Attack of the Clones. Well, gentlemen, it's time. Oh, it's time. We have discussed guilty pleasure movies. You're going to decide one, your guilty pleasure movie, what it is, and then the audience, I'm going to go to each, and you're going to choose which one of us will never get to see that movie again.
I hate this.
Because we've all taken a vow on a podcast. So we're definitely going to follow this, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, boy.
So at least, yes, exactly. So let's go down the line. Bradley, what's your guilty pleasure movie? You're picking it now.
The Hangover 2.
What? First of all, I think that you're cheating because I don't think that's your guilty pleasure movie. I think you don't want to see it again.
No,
liar.
I actually do like that movie.
It's
okay. I would never have guessed it. Wait, we got to hear. Okay, so Patty, what's yours? We have Hangover 2.
Mine is actually another sequel. It's Any Which Way You Can, the sequel to Any Which Way But Loose. Clint Eastwood and his famous orangutan, Right Turn Clyde.
First of all, I love those monkey movies. That is, monkey movies are a genre. We haven't seen a good monkey movie in a long time.
No,
Planet of the Apes movies are not monkey movies. Those are not monkey movies. I'm talking about movies where someone has a friend that's a monkey.
Hey, what about Outbreak?
Exactly. Speed Racer fits into that. But wow, Any Which Way You Can. Charlie, what's your...
Attack of the Clones. No.
Wait, that would be a good choice.
Yeah, because I don't want to see that movie again. But I would... all right, so earlier you asked about the criteria, and I said it's a film that had terrible word of mouth, but I was pleasantly surprised. This film had, like, poisonous word of mouth for, like, a year or so before it came out because of its production troubles. It had nicknames such as Kevin's Gate and Fishtar. Waterworld.
Whoa!
I love the hell out of Waterworld. Waterworld. Now, hang on. When was the last time you watched it? Ever? Have you ever seen Waterworld?
I saw it in the theater, but I want to hear your argument.
Okay. First of all, it's a highly ambitious film in terms of the scope and all the scale of that, constructing that atoll and the fortress and all the stuff on the water. Dennis Hopper is chewing scenery like Jack Nicholson does on his A game. But it's really funny and cheesy in a way that I actually enjoy. When the film opens and you see the Universal Globe start to get flooded by water and you're a trailer voice guy saying, "The future." You know, it's like immediately telling you, okay, we screwed this movie up so bad, we're going to have fun with the post-production side of it in terms of how they cut it, how they scored it. And it has, for me, one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen. I cried laughing, which is when Dennis Hopper, who's the bad guy, and he's running the Exxon Valdez, now called the D's, it's filled with oil. And I think at some point someone drops a cigarette or a flare into the oil. And down in the bowels of this thing is this ancient old looking guy who's Carl Oldie Olsen from Conan O'Brien's show. He's like a million years old. And this flare comes down and it's going to ignite the whole thing, thus killing him. His last words are, "Oh, thank God!" And he finally dies. And I lost it in the theater. I laughed so hard that just won me over for whatever flaws the film has. That got me. So, Waterworld.
There are some people that probably don't think Waterworld is very funny, and they live in Houston. That's just what I want to say.
Oh, like,
what?
Man.
What? I'm just saying. Wait, no.
You could have given it a
No, month. I talked to a guy.
Here you guys are banging a Highlander. You stay.
I talked to a guy I know from Houston. He and his family are fine, and I was really happy to see he and his wife, and they were telling me about what it was like in Houston in water up to their waists. So, but they survived it, and we also survived Waterworld, the movie. So what is your guilty pleasure film, Shane?
Deep Blue Sea.
What?
Yeah. Because, and here's, like, because I was expecting this, and it gave me that. Like, that's all it needed for me to, like, watch it. Oh, and animatronic sharks, they're scary because they have no natural habitat. That's what makes animatronic sharks scary.
All right, I'll buy that argument. Animatronic sharks.
But it also has one of the greatest death scenes in the history of cinema.
Right.
I mean, ever.
Which one?
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, the Sam Jackson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that made me jump. That actually...
He's giving this rousing, emotional, rallying cry speech, and mid-sentence, he gets devoured by a shark. It's amazing.
And Michael Rapaport's just dumb in it. Like, he's supposed to be a dumb guy playing a smart guy, and I don't buy into that, so...
Well, yes, I think that was definitely a stretch for him. My guilty pleasure movie I'm throwing on the chopping block, and I'm surprised it hasn't came up with this crew here, but Logan's Run.
Wow.
With Jenny Agutter and Michael York, and it has... See, now this is a recurring theme, which is not... I did not intend, but there's, like, good nudity in it that's essential to the plot, and in a way... This movie predicted Chat Roulette, because there's a scene where Logan is like on the circuit and he's sort of dialing in. It's like, think I'll have sex, and he's sort of dialing in, and then a guy comes up and he looks at the guy and they both go like, aw, we're not gonna fuck. And then he goes away, and then the girl comes, Jessica, and that's how he meets her. They don't really explain what the circuit is. It's like, you know, it's like the Tinder of the domes. And then the movie looks like it was shot at Dragon Con. And by that I mean, if you look at like the escalators and all this, like in the future, they will have escalators, which they have now. It was shot at actually a shopping mall in Texas. And they never explain why the two lead characters have British accents, even though the entire rest of the cast has American accents. They never bother to explain it at all. But the reason that movie still works for me is the chemistry between Jenny Agutter and Michael York. There's an amazing chemistry. And Jenny Agutter, you can look her up on your Mr. Skin account. I'm sure you all have one. But I'm just saying that... She's amazing in it. It's really the chemistry of them. Some of the worst special effects in filmmaking. I mean, it's pretty cheesy, bad. It's like a train set, right? But the score is amazing. The score is incredible. Wait, who did the...
Jerry Goldsmith?
Yeah. Jerry Goldsmith did the score. I don't know. It's also... I saw it as a kid, and then I read the book, and the book and the movie have almost nothing to do with each other. The book is about the youth rebellion in the 60s, in a way, kind of like that spark, like, and they kill you when you're 21. The book is very strange. I mean, it was more like hippie drug stuff in it. But the movie kind of took the essence of that, and yes, it's a guilty pleasure. It definitely isn't a great film. So, yeah.
Hey, Anthony, what's your favorite guilty pleasure film? Thanks for asking, Chris. You've never sounded better, by the way. My favorite has to be Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. I'm a sucker for inferior sequels to big horror movie franchises. I love when the killers get resurrected in ridiculous ways. The cheesier, the better. Nothing is more batshit insane than the way Freddy comes back in Nightmare 4. For those who haven't seen it, basically a dog pisses on Freddy's charred remains and voila, Freddy's back, bitches. I fucking love it. Beyond that, everything about Nightmare 4 is amazing in an amazingly bad kind of way. The kills are imaginative, sure, but they are in no way scary. The main character, Alice, played by Lisa Wilcox, is the only character who isn't a terribly cliched caricature. You have the asthmatic girl, the tough girl, her Karate Kid loser boyfriend, and all of the returning cast members from Elm Street 3 who are already caricatures in their movie too. I have a lot of unreasonable affection for this film, but I can wholeheartedly admit it's a tough movie to love if you don't love it already. Anyway, back to the panel.
But now we have to choose. Now it is up to you. So I want you to raise your hand. We'll go down the line. We'll start with Bradley and just say your movie, and then you guys react how you react. All right?
And the reaction is if they...
If they choose it...
If they raise their hands, if like the majority... No.
They'll do an audible reaction. Okay. Let's do an audible reaction. So, but Bradley, like, say your film and then audibly react, like, if you think that this is one he should never see again. One of us is going to be chosen. All so right. Go ahead. We'll start.
The Hangover 2.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Nobody gives a shit whether you've seen it or
not. Right. Okay.
That's
Patty.
My girlfriend, by the way.
Any which way you can.
Whoa.
Oh, man.
Thank you. I love that movie.
Some other movie that's not Waterworld?
Waterworld!
I just wanted the applause.
That's Waterworld's in the lead. All right, Shane.
Deep Blue Sea? Oh, thank God. All right.
Logan's Run. Well, that is true. That is true. But wow, our winner today, Charles de Lazarica, Waterworld, he will never, ever see that movie again.
I would have voted for Waterworld 2. It's terrible.
Even though it's his guilty pleasure favorite. I want to thank you all at Dragon Con. Dragon Con, my favorite audiences. They always come drunk and ready to talk. I love it. Because most of the panelists are also. So I want to thank you guys. I'm sure you'll see me at the Pulse Loft or the Pulse Bar out here at the Marriott or one of the other bars cosplaying. I want to thank Bradley Gibson, Patty Hawkins, Charles de Lazarica, Shane Mackey. I'm that Chris Gore. Thank you very much for coming to see the Film Threat Podcast live from Dragon Con. Woo! Let's go drink.
So there you have it, Film Threat listeners. Next week, I'll be back for realsies. And Chris and I will give you more of what you love. Me. I'm just kidding. A little bit. Have a good one. Let's get out of here.